Wednesday night, last Sunday it was, we talked about the fact that while Moses was in the mountain the first time, receiving some more detailed instructions from God and so forth, that back in the camp, the Israelites had Aaron to build a golden calf, thereby breaking the covenant they had made with God. The result is Moses came back down from the mountain, he threw the stones down, broke them, and there were some rather serious discussions that went on among he and Aaron and the people. Over a period of time, Moses interceded for the people. Of course, God had even said, I'm going to destroy these people and make a great nation out of you. That was not Moses' desire. Intercedes for the people. The covenant is restored. Chapter 34. And in the end of chapter 34, we see God calling Moses back up into the mountain, has him to bring two tables of stone with him. And there he stays for 40 days and 40 nights alone this time. And as a result of being in the presence of God, when he comes back into the camp, we see his face shining. People were afraid and so forth. But over a period of time, that glory, quotation marks, faded away. But as he was in the mountain the first time, according to chapter 25, that was the time where God did, in fact, tell him that he did want a tabernacle, a sanctuary built, where he could be, quote, in the presence of the people as they journeyed about. He gave them very specific instructions on what he wanted the tabernacle to look like, what he wanted the furnishings to be, so forth, and the garments that the priests would wear as they ministered to him in the service. But Moses does not tell the people first time he comes back. And I think it's because of the events surrounding his coming back off the mountain the first time. They'd broken the covenant, very busy speaking with God, interceding for the people. So he doesn't tell them about God's plan until he comes back down from the mountain the second time. We see that in chapter 35. So he tells the people about God's plan, and he asks them to provide the materials for the building of the tabernacle. This is what Jeff talked about two or three weeks ago in his sermon. He used this particular example as he talked to the congregation here about how we had given over the last year and so forth. So in chapter 36, as they were building the tabernacle, these workmen actually had to come to Moses and say, we've got more than enough. The people have just given so much. Tell them not to bring anything else. So Moses has to actually command the people, stop giving, because of their great generosity toward the service of the Lord. Again, an indication that they had repented of the way they had behaved while Moses was in the mountain the first time. So there were a couple of men who were put as, quote, overseers for the work. Man from the tribe of Judah, according to chapter 35 and verse 30, Bezaleel, and one from the tribe of Dan, Eliab, however you pronounce it, from the tribe of Dan. It's interesting to see the description of those who would actually help with the work. How do these people describe that every wise person or wise man that God had given wisdom and instruction to? They all came and began to undertake the work of building the tabernacle. So it's a wonderful time right now in the camp of Israel. People have focused their attention on worshiping God and building the sanctuary, the tabernacle that he had required them to, or asked them to build. Okay, we're going to spend our time today looking at the physical structure of the tabernacle, talking about some of the clothing and so forth that the priest would wear. And I have tried to summarize that on the handout that I gave you. There's quite a bit of information available in Bob's book, Bob and Sandra's book, and also, of course, they had taken it from the scriptures, but tried to squeeze that down into a couple of pages, and maybe we can look at most of it today. Tabernacle itself, and I told Charles, I said, I guess if I were smart, I would turn this thing this way, because that's actually east. That's the way it is east. But normally, we look at maps maybe in this direction here. But the tabernacle always doesn't always be upside down, that's for sure. The tabernacle always faced east. And we'll talk about the various parts as we go through. But as you, most of you know, it was divided into two parts. The most holy place, and this was where God had promised to meet the people. We'll talk more about that. Most holy place was basically a 15-foot cube, 15 feet this direction, that way, and also 15 feet tall. The holy place was about 30 feet by 15 feet. And I say about, because it's described as being put together with boards. These boards were a cubit and a half wide, which if we assume the 18 inches as a cubit, that would make those boards about 27 inches, 2 feet 3 inches wide. And there were 20 of them that made up the sides of the tabernacle. The end was described as 6 boards plus 2 boards. Apparently, maybe the 2 boards had something to do with some strange angle maybe used to help support it. It was really not clear, because if you take 6, that's only about 13 and a half feet. If you take 2 more boards, that makes it more than 15 feet. But it's generally taken to be about 15 feet by 15. Well, we know this is a cube, 15 by 15. That's obviously the answer. But that's the way it was constructed, out of boards and so forth. But each one of these boards had a projection or a leg on it, 2 legs on it, and they set down into sockets, silver sockets. And they also had, of course, being 15 foot tall, they had rings on them. Doesn't say how many rings, but there were rings so that you could push these staves through to support those things as they stood up. And obviously, I think the last comment I made was that there were various tent pegs and so forth to help support the walls as they were standing there. But there was also a veil between the most holy place and the holy place. It had some type structure supporting it. And also there was a veil over the entrance, holy place. Now, it was a tent, basically. There were four sets of coverings over it, and no description as to how the roof was. But again, we know this was 15 feet tall back here. There's nothing said about the height of this particular part of the tabernacle. But the first covering was made of white linen. Real fine linen, and it had some embroidery work, figurines representing the cherubims and so forth in the fabric that covered the most holy place and so forth. The second layer, it said, was cloth made out of goat's hair, and it was large enough that it came over the back, each side, and even over the front. So it completely covered the basic tabernacle. Third layer was a male sheepskin, still had the wool left on it, dyed black. And this outer layer King James uses the word badger skin. American Standard says seal skin. But whatever it was, obviously it was water resistant. Large enough, I would say, to cover, because it describes the one made out of goat's hair completely encompassing the building. So you would imagine that this one would be completely encompassing also, so that nothing would get wet as it rained, and maybe provided insulation and so forth too. The courtyard. Let's see. Also, I talked about the veil. And we'll see over and over the colors and the material used in the priest's garment and so forth. They always talked about fine linen. And colors are always blue, purple, and scarlet. Basically what we had talked about there. This veil between the innermost part and the outermost, and also holy place. Any comments or questions about basic structure of the tabernacle? Pattern. He gave them the pattern, didn't he, Bill? And I didn't stress that, as I talked about when Moses was up in the mountain. God didn't leave any stone unturned. And I think I make that comment about some of the furniture. He gave them exactly how he wanted it made. And goes ahead. James, go ahead. Yeah. Overlaid with gold. Didn't go away quick, did it? Of course, we see part of the furnishings. Talk about it in David, you know. We'll talk a little bit about how it was to be carried and so forth. David got in trouble one time after the Philistines had captured the Ark of the Covenant, and they had hauled it around on a milk cart and so forth, and started moving, and he thought that was probably okay. So he does the same thing and causes a lot of problems. But God gave instructions on not only how it's to be built, but how it's to be carried, who's to carry it, and everything. So, specific instructions. Other comments? God? You'd be surprised. No. Sure it is. Right. He is a supreme being. Took the effort to tell us exactly what he wants y'all to make him. No other religious group, all directed out towards some object that we have made.
Okay.
As we begin, though, to look at the furnishings inside of the... not quite through. The courtyard, it's about 75 feet wide and about 150 feet long. And there's a 30-foot opening on the east end of the courtyard. And this thing is made out of really just like a curtain, 7.5 feet tall, which would be about half the height of the tabernacle itself. Each one of these boards they're actually posts stuck down into sockets, and then rods with the curtains, with rings on the rods and curtains hanging there. So the outer wall is basically a 7.5 foot tall curtain in white linen and so forth with embroidery work. So that's the basic layout, the physical structure. And again, I made the comment, there's obviously, since it is kind of a tent-type arrangement, it has to have some type supporting thing. And they talked about the tent pegs and so help support that. And they were made out of bronze. Okay, the furniture. Again, God tells him exactly how the furniture ought to be built, how it's going to be used, has to be cared for, has to be moved, who's going to move it, and so forth. And of course, as we go through our study, we'll find out that the clan of Kohath is responsible for moving tabernacle and so forth. All how they were descendants of Levi. Back in chapter 6, we talked about Moses' parents, his father being Amram, and Amram's father was Kohath, and Kohath's father was Levi. So it's the descendants of Levi, but particularly the tribe of Kohath that will be the ones who would move it. Okay, the Ark of the Covenant, sitting inside the most holy place. It's basically a box, almost 4 foot long, about 2 foot or so wide. It does have legs on it. On each one of those legs, there are rings, so they can push staves through that. And you recall how the priests would carry the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders with these rods or staves that were pushed through. Made out of acacia wood or shittim wood, overlaid with gold. And the lid itself was actually made of solid gold. We'll notice one other piece of furniture. In addition to the lid of the Ark of the Covenant, also the candlestick be made out of solid gold. The rest of the furniture is made out of acacia wood overlaid with gold. That's the only two differences I could find as to how this furniture was together. But around, you could imagine, you just couldn't lay a lid on top of a box and move it around. There had to be some type of rim around it for this lid to kind of sit into, keep it at, stationary as it was moved from place to place. So that's what we see in this particular thing. But there were cherubims, some type figure, on each end of the Ark of the Covenant. And they were facing each other. They sit in this. We were told that the table of stone were to be placed in the Ark of the Covenant. And then later on, as we go through our study, we'll find out that pot of manna and also Aaron's rod was that budded was also put into the Ark of the Covenant. Again, this is where God promised to His presence would be with the people as they travel. This is where God dwelt. Right outside of this veil was the altar of incense. Even though it's sitting right by the veil, Hebrews chapter 9 considers it part of the most holy place. Small box, about 3 foot tall, if I recall, about with the top of it about an 18 inch. Also, it was, you would be able to carry it. It had projections on each of the corners. But the incense to God was burned from this particular place. And the only other time I think anything was mentioned about having anything touch this particular piece of furniture was on the Day of Atonement. When the atonement sacrifice was made, the high priest would bring some and some of the blood and put it on the post of, or the horns of that particular piece. But this is where the special perfume offered up to God was. The table of showbread on the north side of the holy place. Some structure, no specific links and so forth given that I could find. You remember they would have the showbread. I think it was changed out weekly. 12 loaves of showbread. And on one occasion, of course, that was reserved for the priest to eat. But on one occasion, when Saul was chasing David, David actually went in and was given some of the showbread he'd eat at that particular time. Also, there were vessels associated with this, and all of them were made of gold. Platters and so forth that the bread was probably put on. And they also had some vessels and bowls that part of that particular activity. Okay, as we move to the south part of the holy place, again, this was where the candlestick, and it was made out of solid gold, as I indicated earlier. About all we know about it, it did have some type base and some type pedestal. There were 7 branches, and on each one of the branches, there were 3 cup-like cup-type formations. They were different. They represented different types of blossoms. Those cups held olive oil. Time to time, the priest would go in and light those. And don't know exactly, other than you could imagine a 30-foot deep tent, quotation marks, covered. It probably was pretty dark back in there, and maybe it just provided light for the priest. There's really no explanation as to why it was there, other than it was there and it did have oil in it. Oil was lit from time to time. Yeah. But each one of the 7 branches had 3 cup-like things. Oil was lit. Okay, and then outside in the courtyard, there were 2 pieces of furniture. This was just basically a a 7.5 foot square box open in the middle, 4.5 feet tall. It had a ledge around it where the priest could actually stand on it. They had hooks and so forth as they built the fire inside, obviously, and had various tools that they used to maybe move the meat around and so forth. But it was made out of bronze, something that would withstand the heat fire inside. This labor, again, really no dimensions were given other than it had some type base and it was a bowl. And it was used, it was a bronze bowl, and it was used to for the priests to wash their hands and wash their feet as they entered the tabernacle or either sacrifices. All right, any comments about the furniture or questions? All right, then, the last thing today we want to look at the garments that the priests made as they went about serving God. And as you look at the description of these things, they were elaborate, particularly garments that the high priest. And we should not be surprised, because Exodus 28 and verse 2 and also verse 40 talks about these garments were made for glory and for beauty. Not to bring glory or be beautiful in terms of the high priest, but for the glory and beauty of God, I would I take that to be, as they worked in service of the Lord. Again, very specific details on what these garments are going to look like and how they were to be made and the type of material and so forth. Find out anytime you violate that, you're in trouble, aren't you? These people are examples of that. Specific, again, specific instructions. But we see the high priest, his garment was more elaborate than the ordinary priest. Because at least once a year, he was the only person that was allowed to go into the most holy place. That was only one time a year. His work was higher calling, quotation marks, I guess I could use that, than the ordinary priest. Dressed quite differently. These particular things. As I indicated on the little chart, there were three similarities, I guess you would say, between all the priests and the high priest as to what they wore, or at least a couple of similarities. Well, three, I guess. First of all, if you started inside the material nearest the body, it was a linen type breeches. The waist down to basically about the knee, and it was described as something that would cover their nakedness, and it was worn by all the priests as they worked near the altar or went into the tabernacle. Do you recall we talked about several classes ago some of the first altars that God commanded them to build? They were made out of unhewn stones. They were not to have steps and so forth. And they used that descriptive term, lest their nakedness be exposed. So as these men worked, you know, over, reaching over into the altar there to move the meat and so forth, obviously they needed some covering, lest their nakedness be exposed. Now the next layer, again, for all the priests, they had a coat or a tunic that covered basically covered the body, made out of fine linen and some type embroidery type pattern woven into these coats. Skip to the bottom of the page there. The other thing that was somewhat similar to the high priest was a golden or a beautifully colored sash or something or girdle that they put around their waist as they worked. But their heads, it was just simple white caps or white bonnets, again, made out of white linen. But you'll see in all these cases, all the material was fine white linen material. You always saw the colors of blue, gold, and scarlet. And if there was a material used, it was gold. So very elaborate type dress for these people. But in addition to the undergarment and the coat, then the high priest himself, he had on a blue coat or robe over this tunic. And again, it was made out of this real nice material, blue, purple, and scarlet threads interwoven into this linen fabric. And the gold threads, it said they were actually cut out, sheets of pure gold, not just something that kind of looked like gold overlaid or whatever. This is the real thing that was used in here. Apparently, and around the bottom, that's one thing I was about to forget, around the hem of his garment, that particular garment, had these small gold bells and also little balls represented, described as pomegranates. But they kind of alternated around the hem as he walked. I guess the bell would ring, but he had to wear as he went about his work, and it was described as lest he die. Again, a commandment that Bill keeps alluding to, very specific about what he had to wear. Then over this robe, though, was something I imagined as kind of a something that came down about the waistline, front and back, because there was some type of girdle that attached the bottom part of it. But it also had, on each one of the flaps, had some onyx stones set in gold. On one flap, you had the names of six of the tribes of Israel by birth engraved. On the other flap, you had the other six tribes of the Israel engraved. Now, over that ephod, though, was the breastplate. And it was like a 9-inch by 9-inch square. It was about the size of it. It was folded over kind of to make a pouch where he could put his hands in from either side. We don't know a whole lot about this Urim and Thummim, but apparently those were inside of that breastplate. Some way those were used to inquire of God. We see that all through the history of the Israelites. I know almost every occasion when you read about David, they and he inquired of God through the priest that was traveling with him. But on the front of this, though, said it had four rows of precious stones set in gold. They had the names, again, of the 12 tribes engraved on them. The idea being that I think when the high priest went into the most holy place in the presence of God, he actually carried with him tribes and so forth, made that journey into the most holy place once a year. Also, he had a turban on his head with a gold plate on the front of it, with the words "Holy to Jehovah" engraved on it. And that plate was attached with a blue lace cord involved in the sacrifice on the Day of Atonement. Rather elaborate, though, dress for these they went in to serve God. Comments? Questions? About all I can do? But I hope that helps. And Wednesday night, Lord will, we'll talk about the sacrifices that these priests and so forth were responsible for offering for the people and so forth. And I tried to take about 20 pages out of Bob and Sandra's books, 20 or 25 pages, and condense it down into hopefully something that we can get our arms around that part. Observation, James. About the end of this end of the from the end of this end of the about here over is about 15 feet. Good observation. Teaching one class one time.